Hello, everyone. So, we're in the midst of learning how King Solomon got settled in to running the country. One of the things that surprised us was that he married the daughter of Paro, and I noticed an interesting thing that it mentioned that was at the beginning of chapter 3, right after it said it mentioned the death of Shimei. Shimei ben Gera was the one who had cursed his father. And the one he had said, all right, if you live here in Yerushalayim and you'll stay out of trouble. And Shimei just couldn't do it. He went out one day to chase after his servants. Or at least that's what it says. You never really knew with him exactly. But then right away after it dies, it says over here that he marries the daughter of Paro. So Chazal say that as long as his Rebbe was alive, he wouldn't have done that. In other words, if he had to invite his Rebbe to the wedding and say, guess who the bride is? Oh, Bas Paro. He wouldn't have been real happy with it. He wouldn't have done that. And we mentioned that Shlomo envisioned himself as the Mashiach, as the one that would reach out to all the nations, as the one that would spread the word. But had his Rebbe been alive, then he would have been able to speak to him and perhaps show him where his mistake was. But at this point, which is really fascinating also, and that is that Hashem comes to Shlomo and considers him righteous. And so even though he made his mistake, and we mentioned Chazal that said that the beginning of the crack of the foundation that was being built, in other words, Shlomo HaMelech was building the Beis HaMikdash, which was the place that would hold Hashem's divine presence and would be building the temple for the Jewish people. At the very beginning, there was already a crack there. And that was his marrying the daughter of Paro. But even with that, see, we tend to see people as all good or all bad, and with that, Hashem comes to him, and we see, we started this, just review though, really verse 3 speaks out, you know, who was Shlomo? Shlomo loved to go, V'yev Shlomo es Hashem. Shlomo loved Hashem. Every now and then you meet a person who, we all love Hashem. We say in the Shema every day, we love Hashem with all of, but there are some people that say it, and there are other people that live it. In other words, it's just so, their love of Hashem really comes through. And it says over here that Shlomo loved Hashem, and he was going after the ways of his father. One of the things he tried to do was he tried to get some communication. He wanted a certain clarity, so he brought 1,000 offerings. And that's pretty big. 1,000, I mean, just, there's a question whether he did it all in one day or not. I mean, how do you, you know, bring 1,000 offerings? There's only so many hours in the day to do. Some people say it was extended. Other people learn it all happened in one day. But he was trying to get Hashem's attention. He felt that he wanted Hashem's communication. And this is, Shlomo says a special prayer. This was in verse 6. He says, you know, how he went in front of David, his father. And so Hashem gives him a choice, and he says, what do you want? This is interesting. Like most leaders, if you would say, all right, we'll give you a request. What is it that you want? You know, they ask Obama, right? Or they ask ask some other leader. I'll give you one request. What would you say you would, what would you want? So Shlomo's request was that he have a Lev Shomea. This is where we'll start here again in verse 9. Benasati Levdecha, chapter 3, verse 9. He says that he wanted to have a Lev Shomea, a hearing heart. And there's so many times that there are problems in relationships because the person doesn't hear the other side. Now, sometimes you don't hear the other side because they're not saying the words that they're saying one thing and they mean another. And that's where you need a Lev Shomea. You got to be able to hear in your heart where they're coming from. What is the issue? And so he felt, as a leader, the most important thing the country, and now he didn't ask for money, he didn't ask for, he says that the leader has to be a Lev Shomea. They have to be able to hear a hearing heart. They have to be able to judge what's correct. And then he goes on and he says also Lahavin, which means to intuition, that you have to be able to figure things out. Now this is going to play prominently in the last case that we're going to bring down with the the two women and the cutting of the baby, that's coming up today. But stay tuned, right? So he says, though, that a person needs to hear what they're saying, and then you need a bina, which means intuition. The word bina comes from the Hebrew word bona, to build. In other words, you hear something, and then you have to be able to go to bona, to build on the next step. And then you have to know what's good and what's bad. And he says that it's a heavy job. It's a heavy job to people come in front of you, decide who's right. And the king is the final arbiter. He's the one that has to decide. Verse 10, V'itav adar v'nei Hashem kisho shlom. In Hashem's eyes, this was an amazing thing. The Yomer Elokim, verse 11. And here it says Elokim. Elokim is usually the God of justice. He says, Yanesh Eshelti, because you asked for this. He didn't ask for something personal that would make it easy for him. He didn't ask. He asked basically to do a good job as a king. He asked to be able to discern who's right and who's wrong. And he said, because you asked, below Shalti Yamim Ra, you could have asked for a long reign. You know, you could say, you know, the kings, we'll have later on kings that came and go. You know, sometimes certain countries, every time you look, there's a different leader. It's like a revolving door. So you didn't ask for a long time to be king. According to most people, Shaul was not king for very long. His dynasty didn't last 2 years, I think some people say. It was a pretty short amount of time that he was actually king. So you didn't ask for a long time to be king. Below Shalta, and you didn't ask for wealth. Every king wants wealth. Imagine having a budget that, you know, to print as many dollars as you want. And in ancient times, you had to have the means to do that, you know, to just keep on paying. Below Shalta, and sometimes people want to defeat their enemies in war. And what did you ask for? Having the Shmoya Mishpat. You asked for a good heart to figure out your people, which is just so interesting, because like if we were to ask, what does Israel need? We'd say, well, we need a stable government. You know, the politics in Israel are terrible. If they only had, you know, a good stable government that would last, well, I'm sure they would get it right. Or they need a checkbook where they can just, they discover oil and they have all the wealth, that'll solve all the problems. Or if they defeat their enemies, then everything will be great. We'll all get along together, and everything will be wonderful. No, that we need to. Which all those things would be nice, and but they have to come after that. The leadership knows how to differentiate between good and bad, and has to be able to hear the people. In other words, if you have that skill, that you're able to judge between good and bad, what's good and what's bad, and who needs what, then all the other things, the peace and the tranquility and the good government, can help. But the very basic, you have to be able to distinguish between the good and the bad. At the destruction of the Second Temple, there was a question about when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, maybe, there was a request made about what we really need. And a lot of things in life come down to being able to choose between good and bad, and that's what he asked for. So, verse 12, I'm going to give you that wise heart, and it's not only a wise heart. There's, again, we've often talked about there are people that have a lot of, you know, a brainy, that are chacham, they, you know, that are very, but they don't have, as they say in Yiddish, a bissel seichel, a little bit of seichel, v'navon, and navon means that they could, you know, intuition. You have a little common sense, doesn't hurt now and then. Share kamocha lo hayu lefenecha. And there will never be somebody, even before Shlomo or after him, but lo yachav. In other words, he was unique in that way. We're going to see a description of the wisdom that Shlomo had, and then we can understand why he had the peace that he did. The Gam, verse 13, asher lo shalti, and what you didn't even ask for, I'm going to give you. We often the best prayer we can say to Hashem is like, sometimes we have a list of what we want Hashem to do for us. You know, do this and do that. And then sometimes we say, you know what's best for us. We ask you to, you know, to deal with them kindly, to give us what we need. Sometimes we assume that we know what's good for us. You know, Hashem, I really want to, you know, it's good for me to win the lottery, or it's good for me to, we don't always know what it would be good for me to, sometimes we ask for something, and it turns out that that was the best thing that ever happened to us that we didn't get. First thing, I'm going to give you wealth, and I'm going to give you honor. This was like a pinnacle in history, that the nations just were waiting in line to see what Shlomo had to say. Now, how do you keep such a thing? Verse 14, Deim Teilech Bedochi. You got to stay on the path. Lishmor Chukim. You got to, again, we're always challenged by the Chukim, those mitzvahs we don't understand. If we understood, it would be easy, but even those things we don't understand, we're going to see that Shlomo was challenged by those things. His understanding was so great that those things that he didn't understand, he felt he could, his wisdom could overcome. And Hashem warned him, you got to watch those Chukim. There are certain things we do, we don't fully understand. We don't really, they're Chukim, they're statutes. U'mitzvosai. Kasher holok David avicha. But all of the kings would be in the path of David. That's why David is the monarch. It was his dynasty. And you will live long. And Shlomo woke up. This was in a prophetic dream. This week's Parsha, we have the idea that certain dreams are prophetic, you know, with Paro and with Yosef. And this was Hashem came to him in a dream. Verse 5, and he woke up in the dream. And he brought the offering. And when a person hears good news, a person is supposed to be thank Hashem. Thanksgiving. Well, that was last week. But that's the whole idea, that when a person has a lot to be thankful for, a person should have publicly have a gathering where they eat and they drink. When we eat and drink, we feel very grateful. That inspires us when we have our a festive meal. And so that's a proper time to give thanks to Hashem. Yeah.
Rabbi, it says he came to Jerusalem. Where was he living if not within Jerusalem?
Oh.
He had not yet built the temple.
He went to bring the offerings at, was it Shiloh? I mentioned earlier that he went to Givon.
So that's where he was living.
No, that's where he went to commute.
Oh, so then he had to come back.
He had to come back. That's
because
it.
Because in reference to his wife, it also said that as long as the temple was not built, she could live in Jerusalem. But the minute he built the temple, he had to build a house for her away from Jerusalem. She couldn't live there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was interesting because even though technically she converted to marry him, she still did not have the status of a Jewish wife.
There is some question about that, yes.
Yeah, I found that very interesting, the fact that he had to move her out because she couldn't stay in the city.
Other people say that she needed a lot of, she was a princess and she needed a lot of space.
She was high maintenance.
Yes, high maintenance, that's right. We're going to learn that the primary complaint about the people that when they broke up the was that the taxes were too high to pay for the princesses that Shlomo had. That was the primary complaint. Yes, okay. So now a very interesting story. A lot of people are familiar with this story, but very few people have actually studied this story. The only thing is, like everything, I wish we had all the answers. We'll study it, and there's certain mysteries about it. So let's see. This falls really right in the middle of the chapter where Hashem said that he would give Shlomo this knowledge. Let's see. Az tavonu shteim nashim zonos. And at that time, two women who were zonos, he translates this as harlots, which most people assume that. Sometimes zonos can mean shopkeepers, but most people assume it means sometimes maybe that was like a nice way of saying a harlot, business ladies or whatever was the expression. Elamah, they came with time of the fun of. Now, we're going to see that there's some discussion about these children. Why would people take such a harsh line for children? Well, a child that was born illegitimate, where you didn't know who the father was, you didn't know who the mother was, that was a difficult thing, and it wasn't very popular, such children, such people that weren't were of unknown lineage. Some people say that in society, harlots wouldn't expect to get much justice because they're not in a legal profession. They don't pay the taxes, and they don't. And so what we're saying here was that even a person, even the gangsters got, even the, no matter who it was, in the time of Shlomo, was entitled to justice. There was nobody that was refused. In other words, society has to, everybody has their issues or their things, and it's not, it wasn't nobody turned them away, even if they went all the way to the king. Other people say that this was a, there are certain things in life, you know, this was before DNA, that there was just no way to solve. There was no other, these were the only two women there, and you have these situations in life where there's no way to figure it out. So how do you decide? And Shlomo asked for wisdom to know what to do in those cases where they're puzzled. How do you decide? And so what we're going to see is that he was able to get to the bottom of things, that there was no evidence, there were no witnesses. He was able to figure it out. So there's a third view that, why does it mention that they were harlots? Certain people have a problem, they're unable to lie, they're not really good liars, they're kind of shy. But the people in this particular profession don't necessarily have that kind of problem. They're used to, you know, telling lies, or used to, you know, and they're not shy necessarily. And so that's why nobody else really knew how to, knew how to interrogate them or how to get to the bottom of it because of who they were. 17. V'tamra isha achas. So one of them says, "Be'ah to please my master, ani v'ha isha hazos." She doesn't even call the other lady by name. We're going to see they were pretty angry with each other. Me and this other woman. Yoshev advised that we are staying in the same house. The Eilid Imab advised, and we both gave birth in the house. So there was no father. These two women both were pregnant, and they both gave birth in the house. One lady gave birth first, 18. But he be Yomashlishi, and it was on the third day, 3 days after I gave birth. But Tevet Gami Isha Zos. And this woman also, again, this woman means that she wasn't very fond of her. Vanakta Yachtav, and we were together, just the two of us with their newborns. The Ein Zari Tanu. Now, there's no witnesses. There was no, the first thing, there must be someone, there must be a doctor, a midwife, something. No. Ein Zari Tanu Abayis. There was nobody else in the house. Zulasi Shtayim Anakta Abayis. Just us two. So this is a tough case, meaning that there. How do you determine who's telling the truth? Verse 19. So the first one declares, "V'yamas ben Isha hazos alayla," and this woman's child died at night. Asheshafola, she slept on it. She smothered the child in her sleep. It was an accident, but she killed her baby. Verse 20. "V'taka misocha layla," and the woman got up in the middle of the night. Vatikach es bini me'etzli. She went and she stole my baby from me. Vamoska yishena, and I was sleeping. Vatishkave becheka, and her baby was sleeping next to her. Vesbana hameis ishkiba. She took my baby and brought it to her, and she took the dead baby that was her son and put it next to me. Verse 21. Balkam Babokir, and I woke up in the morning, Lehenik Espini, to nurse my child, Vinemes. And behold, he was dead. Vizmonin Olav, and I was trying to figure out in the morning what happened. And Vine Lohayobini. And this was not my child, Asher Yolatati. Some people say, how could she be sure? Maybe it was the child, there's a 3-day difference. A newborn, when they're first born, they look different than after a few days. Usually when they first come out of the womb, sometimes they're more beaten up from the labor, but you can tell sometimes the coloring gets a little better after a few days. But typically, she said she was able to look into it, and she could see that the dead baby that was there was not hers. 22. V'toma isha cheres. And the other woman said, "Lo, no, it's not true. Ki b'ni hachai. My child is the live one. U'b'nei chames. And your child is the dead one." So the one mother says, my child is the live one, and the other child is the dead one. Mizoso meres, and this one said, lo, ki b'neich meis. No, your child is the dead one, u'b'ni hachai, and my child is the live one. And so they brought the case in front of the king. Anybody notice a difference in that verse, 21, 22, between the two claims?
One says the living is mine and it's first. And the other one says the dead is yours.
Yes. Bingo. Okay. So which one do you think is telling? In other words, one is worried about her child. She says, my child's the live one. And the other one says, no, yours is the dead one. Like, she's like, she wants the other one she's like angry at this other one. Or she doesn't seem to care about the child. As long as the other one, woman shouldn't have a live child, but she would have a live child. It's just interesting that they that mm-hmm. one focused on which one is mine, and one focused on it's not yours. It's more of a selfish reply. Yeah. So those were the two complaints. The issue about the live child, who it belonged to.
So hold on, which one's more selfish?
The one that says, the second one, who says the your child is dead. Why is that important, that your child is the dead one? 23. Now, this seems to be a review. The king says, well, this one says, my child is alive, your child is dead, and this one says, Lo ki bin kameis. No, your child is the dead one, and my child is the live one. Why do you think that it repeats itself over here, 23, to tell us that the king said? So it's a very interesting rule. That we learn out from this that when a Jewish court hears a claim, or a judge hears a claim, they have to repeat what the issues are to the plaintiffs, to the defendant. Because sometimes you, when you repeat it, you hear, is this what you're saying? I have to make sure I'm hearing both sides correctly. And sometimes you repeat it and the person will say, no, that's not what I mean. So it's very important that the judge be able to say both sides, this is what I hear from you and this is what I hear from you. Is that correct? He has to be able to, and so that's the rule. If anybody, no one should ever have to go to Beis Din, the courts will repeat after they hear both sides what they hear as the claim of each side. And they learned that out from, Shlomo did that here.
Well, that's done today at the Supreme Court when you read their decision. That's how it starts off.
Oh, really? They read both sides?
It says the plaintiff argues this and the other side argues that.
Oh, they do? Okay. That is interesting.
That's the wife of the
lawyers. Uh-huh. Well, this is where they got it from, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Verse 24. V'yomra Amela. So the king says, Kikuli Kerf. Get me my sword. The king says, bring the sword. They brought the sword in front of the king. Verse 25. Now here, the king says the following. Gizru esayel rachai l'shnaim. Cut the living child, and the two of them are fighting over it. There's a famous rule when two people are fighting over it and one doesn't have a stronger claim than the other. It's one word against the other. So you split it. So the king says, let's do the same thing. Let's split the child. Utinu es achatzi la'achas, and we'll give half to one. Ves achatzi la'achas, and the other half to the other. Was the what the king pronounced. 26. Mitoma ishesha b'na achai elamelech. Now, the one whose child really was living, who was the real mother, both of them claimed to be the real mother. One of them knew she really wasn't the real mother. But the one who was the real mother, kinimku rachameha al baneha, her primary concern was her child, and she didn't want to see her child killed. The Tamar biadoni tanali yisayela dechai, give it to her. She can have it. Ba meisa, don't kill the child. And the other woman actually didn't want that. She says, gam liba gam lach. No, neither one. Lo yia gazru. The in other words, it doesn't belong to either child. Go through, kill the child, split it in two. So,
Why would she not have accepted that? I'll take the child. Since they're both arguing
over it.
Why didn't she say, yeah, I'll take it?
So, really, she didn't really want the child. She just didn't want the other woman to have. She just was so enraged, you know, that this other woman, you know, her child was alive and this one didn't. So she was happy that the child, she wasn't motivated by love. Shlomo was able, one of the reasons why this was considered very wise was that nobody really knew what to do here. You needed a solution that everybody would be satisfied. And there was no proof. So he had to get a reaction out of the two that would demonstrate to everybody who was telling the truth. And he understood. Now, not everybody would have that reaction. Like I said, most people would have imagined that the other one said, great, you'll let me keep it, fine. But that's not what she said. He understood that he would get that reaction. He by seeing the woman, he understood what kind of person he was dealing with. And the king said, give me the child, and so he, this is the mother. And it amazed the people around them, because usually to get a case, you need witnesses, and you need to prove things. And he was able to bring out the reaction here that everybody could see what was correct. Now people heard about this, and people were afraid because you couldn't hide anything from a king like this. You know, like he could get to the bottom of something. He could get to even things that that other people couldn't figure out. They saw that he had the wisdom of Hashem in his mislasos mishpat. And that was the amazing quality of Shlomo HaMelech. There's a similar, an interesting story. There was Neguna, which was a woman who couldn't remarry because her husband had left her, disappeared. In ancient times, people went away on business and he just never came back. And the woman was alone for, you know, 10, 15 years, and she never knew what happened to him. And somebody came back, and she didn't recognize him, and he said, it's been a long time, but he's the husband, and he described certain, you know, knew the information about the family and this and that. And he would, this person came, and she said, I don't recognize him. I don't know. It's been so long. Don't know anymore. Is he really the husband? Is he not the husband? But they brought him to the rabbi, and they asked him questions, and he seemed to know everything. And they didn't know what to do. Was he the husband? Was he not the husband? Should she continue her relationship with him? Should she not continue? Would he be able to inherit the property of the husband? What do they do? So they took the question to the Vilna Gaon, and his idea was, he said that, I guess he got the question before Shabbos, he said, take him to shul and ask him where the seat in shul, where his seat in shul was.
Oh.
And they come to shul, and sure enough, he had no idea where the seat was. And they said, all right, he's a liar. Take him and lock him up in the shul dungeon. You know, what happened was, it turned out that he had met this guy's, this woman's husband, and he, you know, she told him certain details, but it never occurred to him to ask where he sat in shul, because that wasn't on his mind. And that was a person that would be a criminal doesn't think about, you know, holy things, wasn't thinking about the shul, and that's how they, sometimes that person needs to know what the other person is thinking, where they're coming from. And so over here, Shlomo understood that this woman was a bad, you know, a person who was willing to steal a baby was really like a bad, you know, that this would produce this reaction. She'd be happy if the child was killed. Just the same way, like I said, the Vilna Gaon understood that this person, if the person didn't remember where the seat was in shul, didn't know where to go, then he really wasn't that person. And again, sometimes.
Because I know everything's always chronological. Did this happen right after Solomon became king, or is it just a story they're telling us of something that happened during his kingship?
I would say during his kingship, but in the early years. In the right.
He was so young.
Yes.
So this wasn't like the first judgment he had to make.
Not necessarily. Yeah. Within the beginning of his reign, that. Sometime in the beginning. I don't know, the beginning, 3 months, 6 months, a year, sometime in the beginning.
It's interesting. I can't find the exact places, but God says to Shlomo twice that there'll be no one like you. Mm-hmm. And yet he's not remembered as much as David is. But
as far as this, as far as the wisdom or the judgment, there was no one like Shlomo.
Oh.
Okay. First, chapter 4, Bahia Melech Shlomo Melech, Shlomo was the king of Israel. As wise as he was, again, such an important lesson that you have to be able to delegate, you have to have partners. And Shlomo had ran a government with partners. Elu Asura Meshelo, these were the officers, Ezra Yehu Ben Tzedek HaKohen. First, he had the Kohen. A person has to have a religious person who can inspire him. And then he had Elichorev, Achia Ben Eshisha, Sofrit. He had to have recorders. He had to have people to accurately copy things. Yosheva ben Achila HaMazkir. This person was the Mazkir. The Sofrim wrote things down, and then the Mazkir, was he there? Did he give the reminders? Was he like the
historian?
The historian? Okay, maybe, right. That's. I was also thinking like that, because the word Zai, he remembers. What do we do in such a case? Well, he's the word master also means like to remind or to remember, you know, he reminded, now it's time to do this. Verse 4. Ubanayo ben yoyod al-Spad. Then you got, of course, the head of the army. Utsadak ben Yasser Kohanim. Verse 5. Ezra ben Nasan al-Nitzivim. And you had the appointed people. Vizvid ben Nasan Kohen Roya Melech. And he had his own favorite Kohen. When living in Eretz Israel, there are certain ties that go to the Kohen. Certain person separates a piece of the fruits and the first crops and the first donkey. And he had a special Kohen who was his friend, who he used to give it. He was the official Kohen of the court. Verse 6. Vachishar alabais. And he had somebody in charge of the palace. Adoniram ben Avad Alamas. And this is the first time it's mentioned, the taxes, the history of taxes. There was somebody that collected the tax. Verse 7, Shlomo, and Shlomo had. Now, how did they provide for this government, or how was it provided for? So he had it divided into 12 for the 12 months of the year. Shlomo, and Malko Yisrael. The Kilkula Samelech, and they provided for the king. Each one worked 1 month of the year. It was their duty that month to provide whatever was needed. Each was upon them to cover the bills that month. Verse 8. The Elu Shemos, and these are their names of the 12 that were in this position. Ben Chori, Bahar Ephraim, Ben Deker, Ben Makatz, Mishalavim, Ubeja Shemesh, the Elon, some of these places we know where they are, some of them we don't. 10. Ben Chesed, Baruba, Slo, Shoka, Bekol Eretz Chefer. That was another Eretz. Ben Abinadav, Kol Nefes Dar, Tafas, Bashlomo, Haisulo, Isha. Now here it mentions that this one was Shlomo's son-in-law. She was married to Tafas. I don't know why we don't use that name anymore. Never heard that name. In English is Tapas. Tapas. I don't know. Don't know what that name comes from. Tapas Bashlomo. He was married to the princess. The son-in-law, would make sense that he would be in charge of, the son-in-law runs the business. So the son-in-law runs had that position. Verse 12. Ba'ana ben Achila Tanaku Megiddo v'kol Beishan Asher Eitzah Siras Mitaz Israel. These were the people from Beishan. At Eva Machola, at Meva Lokiyamasam, then Geber Rimas Gilad. This person was in the Gilad, that's in the north. Chavis Yor ben Menashe, Begilo, Hevel Argov, Asher Beboshin. It describes it like a large Israel. This area in Boshin is the city, is the part on the other side of the Jordan. There were 60 cities, Gedolos, Komo, Bariach, and Nechoshes. These were big walled cities, fortified cities. A city that was large enough to be fortified meant that they had sometimes a person has like an old car, they don't bother locking the door because there's like nothing to steal. Yeah. But if you have if you lock it up at night and you're very careful, it means that there's something to watch. First, Chinadad ben Ada Machanaima from the city of Machanaim, Achimetz and Naphtali, Gamulakas, Basmas by Shlomo. I've got another son-in-law over here. This one takes Basmas. Now, one of the things, if you have 1,000 wives, you can imagine that there were a lot of royal son-in-laws to go around. And that's also important in government that family can be good and it can be a positive or a negative. A lot of the very successful businesses were started off where people had family members who they could trust, who they knew would put their whole self into the business and then on the other hand, there are corrupt places where they have family members that work for the business who shouldn't be there. And so when it works well, it's wonderful, like to see a family business where everybody's like pitching in together and they work together like family. And there's a certain trust between them that works, that's this unique and a special thing. Where it doesn't work well, that's a different story.
The time frame here doesn't add up. He already has 2 married daughters. And he's...
It's right. So
he's just getting around to dividing.
Yeah. So this list is not the list of what the immediate the way it was set up immediately. This took time. It was over time. This was the. It kind of gets it out of the way to give the list of the government. In other words,
but still, if he was if he became king when he was 12 years old, or when he was
17, right,
you say he reigned only 2 years.
No. That was Shaul.
Oh, Shaul. Oh, how many years? 40 years?
It said, one of the commentaries said that it could have been 40 and it could have been 60. Mm-hmm. Because either he was 12 or he was 20 when he came to the throne. No, nobody knows for sure. They're giving me these suppositions.
All right, so this could be...
So anywhere from 40 to 60 years.
One of the things I think it wants to show here is that the government was... represented all the different tribes. In other words, it wasn't just one tribe. Even though he was from Yehuda, you see over here that he had representatives from really everybody. All the here, verse 17, Yishevah ben Parah b'Yisachar, Shimi ben Ela ben Binyamin, Geber ben Ari Beretz Gilad, Eretz Sichon, Melech Amori, the Og Melech Habashim. They still called it the land of the two kings, the Tziv Echad Asher Baretz. That was the system. In other words, Shlomo, you had in the middle of the system, you had the king who was trying to judge the people and was doing the best job he could. But not only that, he set up judgment in a way that people understood that he was judging fairly. People get very upset if they think they're being taken advantage of or they don't think it's... In other words, we see, even in that case, he might have known what was right, but he wanted to do it in a way that would prove to everybody who the true child would be and who was meant to inherit. And he set up a government that everybody... it was done equally, it was done on a fair basis, and it was the tax base was spread out between the different. It didn't fall too much on one territory or another. And the result was that what we have here in verse 20, Yehuda v'Yisrael, Rabin Kachol Asher Al-Yam, the people, without having to go to war and with everything was good and there was plenty, the people multiplied and they were like the sands of the sea. Ochlim v'shosim v'smechim. And what do you do when you have it good? You eat, you drink, and you enjoy. And the people rejoiced. It was a good time. You know, there's so much of Tanakh where, you know, there's this enemy and there's that enemy. During the time of Shlomo, really because of what David had done, where he fought the wars so that Shlomo, they could enjoy. But it wasn't just that you could enjoy peace. You had to have a righteous king there. You had to have a king that was practicing the justice of Hashem. And so then the people could eat and drink and everybody could be happy and satisfied.
Robert, do we have any commentary on why it's compared to the sand and not the stars? Because, you know, the blessing of, we always say, if you're like the stars, and this way, if you're like the sand, you get trampled on. I mean, it sounds like a bracha both ways. Why would the sand be chosen? In terms of that reminds me of the negative side of the blessing. Although we'll be numerous, but sand is not as good as the stars.
Yeah,
I've heard.
Yeah, so it's interesting what he's asking. He's asking that we find two blessings. Sometimes we're blessed that we'll be like the sand of the sea, and sometimes we're blessed we'll be like the stars. One thing about the sand, you know, you always fill the sandbags when you have time of war. Sand, the sand protects the seashore. In other words, if you have the sand there, that it keeps the shore from eroding and it keeps the water from coming further on. And I don't know why, though, it's not compared to the stars, although maybe that comes later. In other words, maybe we start off like that.
That makes sense, because they established all the boundaries of the kingdom, so the sand, that would make sense there to keep everything...
Like, ordered, locked in, or ordered, or something
that
like that.
That's interesting.
Why does it say Judah and Israel?
So one of the things we're going to see is that Judah is always different, is always separate. He was almost like a separate... There were the 10 tribes, and then there was Judah. It always had its own status. They almost were the people amongst themselves. And later on, everybody leaves Yehuda to themselves,
yeah,
so to speak.
That's later.
Right, that's later. But even earlier, we always find that Judah goes on his own. He has his own, even amongst the tribes. Today, we're all basically descended from Yehuda. There's a small minority from the other tribes, but we're all basically, that's why we're called Jews. Some of that was the large base that everybody had. Wish everybody a Freilich and Chanukah. And, that's exciting that, you know, it's coming this week, the light of Chanukah.